Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, staying with the Northern Irish Assembly elections, I'm joined in the studio by Diarmaid Ferriter, Professor of Modern History at UCD. Good morning.
Morning, Clare.
So what's your reflection on the results as you saw them coming in over the weekend?
Well, inevitably there were headlines going around the world about the Sinn Féin success, and them becoming the largest party is obviously an event of huge political significance. But I think even beyond the numbers of seats and the percentage of the vote, though that's significant, there's an emotional element to that for many who are associated with the Republican project, including those who have been involved for decades and who feel that this is a huge breakthrough for them. And I wouldn't underestimate that. Of course, it's also about historically the revision of the Sinn Féin project over many decades to the point where they accepted that they would have to work within Northern Ireland to try and achieve their political aims and the acceptance of consent. And even the idea of being involved in the governance of Northern Ireland obviously involved a revision of the Republican project. So there have been various stages to it, north and south, over the years to get them to this point. But it's of huge significance. But what's also changed, of course, is not just the balance of power, but the political complexion. And that presents us with a very, very interesting picture and a whole series of dilemmas. You also have, I suppose, a reminder, unionism is not down and out. It's not finished. The DUP, I think Geoffrey Donaldson will probably be a lot happier with the results than he expected to be a couple of weeks ago. And there will be many in Northern Ireland who in a few months may well feel that very little has changed at all, because the prospect now is of a very long standoff. But I think when you were looking at the evolution of Northern Ireland, and you remember the speech that was made by David Trimble almost 25 years ago about historically it being a cold house for Catholics.
Yeah.
But I'm also really interested in the rise of the Alliance Party. It's not an overnight success. The Alliance Party is 52 years old this year, which I think sometimes people forget. And you'll appreciate going back to the early 1970s when it was established, Oliver Napier and Bob Cooper, who came from, you know, different traditions and different religious identities and were seeking an alternative. Now, they were a pro-union party in those early days. They got it in the neck from the SDLP, who said they were just trying to promote this unionism for middle-class Catholics. They got it in the neck from Ian Paisley, who said they were traitors to the union. And interestingly, Oliver Napier had come to prominence as an advocate of integrated education in the late 1960s. And his argument, consistent argument over the decades, was that you had to bring people in Northern Ireland together, that you couldn't go over their heads to try and come up with a solution to the problem of Ulster. And, you know, it's been a very, very long journey for the Alliance Party to try and find a support base that's much broader than the few kind of middle class constituencies where they were able to make some inroads.
Perhaps it just needed the passage of time to happen.
Well, not just that. They also needed to reposition themselves. And it's very interesting to look at their own complexion and the kind of younger activists who were involved, and even the recognition of greater diversity, sexual orientation, all of those different areas. So this election has, I suppose, also revealed a difficult irony for the architects of the Good Friday Agreement, including the SDLP, who are once again are asking themselves that question, what do we stand for? Where do we position ourselves? The Ulster Unionist Party has had five leaders in the last 10 years. You know, Doug Beattie talks now about an agile unionism. What does that mean now in 2022? Where do they find a political future for themselves? So there's a lot of interesting narratives going on under the headline of the Sinn Féin triumph.
So the moderates who might have traditionally voted for those two parties you just mentioned may have drifted to the Alliance now.
Well, I suppose many in the Ulster Unionist Party did not consider themselves to be moderates, and there was a huge struggle within the Ulster Unionist Party to get them to accept the idea of the Good Friday Agreement. And you remember all the struggles, the internal struggles that David Trimble had. But certainly that's where Doug Beattie is looking to distinguish the Ulster Unionist Party from the DUP, a progressive unionism, an agile unionism. He struggled, of course, to hold on to his own seat, which is an indication of the mountain they face. And even for the SDLP, what does the Labour Party or the Labour part of their title mean anymore? I mean, if you go back again to Gerry Fitt, the founder of the party, one of the founders of the party, when he parted ways with the party in the late 1970s, what concerned him was that the SDLP had become too green, too Republican, that they were no longer, as he put it, the voice of concern when it came to social issues. And we heard a lot during the election about social issues being a priority, economic issues being a priority for the electorate. So the SDLP, it has been struggling for a long time now as to where to position themselves. But there's also going to be the question of London and how politicians in Northern Ireland deal with London now. We talked last year about the centenary of the creation of the state of Northern Ireland. The very first Prime Minister of Northern Ireland, James Craig, his biographer Hugh Sherman talked about him being in that position at the very foundation of the state. And one of the lessons that he learned straight away was that London was not to be relied on. And it raises this interesting question, which both Martin McGuinness and Ian Paisley, now gone, used to refer to as the challenge of self-determination. Even representing their respective constituencies, can we come together for self-determination purposes? In other words, you don't want to be reliant on London. And like we've had these almost desperate pleas from Ian Paisley Jr. now to Boris Johnson to be the unionist we need you to be.
Mm-hmm.
And Boris Johnson, as we know, doesn't bring an intellectual or ideological consistency to anything. So that's going to remain a huge problem for the DUP.
But maybe the minds in Westminster might be refocused by what's happening both in Scotland and in Northern Ireland. And, you know, this real threat now to the union, which might have been something that was ideological up to this point or a vague threat. It's now become more of a possibility, hasn't it?
It'll be focused, though, in a way that will suit the English political project. I mean, that's been a consistency there. Really since 2016. There was a Sunday Times survey done last year, the end of last year, which suggested that only 31% of English voters would be disappointed if Northern Ireland left the Union. There's that element to it. The question, of course, of has the unity train left the station? I mean, clearly Sinn Féin are going to talk about this unity timetable of 5 years, which in many ways is far-fetched. I mean, you'll be aware that Mary Lou MacDonald has made repeated references to the idea that unity is being discussed in every town and every village and every city across the country. That is wild exaggeration. Unity remains Sinn Féin's core political project. There's no ambiguity around that. But, you know, if this train has left the station, where exactly is it going? How long is it going to take? Is it going to be derailed? Is it really realistic to think that this is something that can be achieved in 5 years?
Well, the polling figures, I think, were they the University of Liverpool polling figures, which said only 30% would support United Ireland now, 33% in 5 years.
They're the other interesting figures, but also the idea that a Northern Ireland Life and Times survey, 42% of those in Northern Ireland don't identify themselves as either nationalist or unionist. That is hugely significant. We're starting to see it reflected now to a degree in the election results.
But
if you combine all of those, what does it mean about Irish unity? You know, that script is not half as clear as Sinn Féin are suggesting. And Mary Lou MacDonald has argued that this conversation is only going in one direction, in the direction of a border poll. But as we know from the Good Friday Agreement, and I often say this to students, what is not in an agreement or a text can be as important as what is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Sinn Féin's gift to call a border poll. Obviously, it's the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland. There's nothing in the agreement that indicates what measures they would use in relation to whether there is sentiment there.
It's a bizarre thing, really, isn't it, in the Good Friday Agreement?
It's also, I mean, and it's linked to a point that Jonathan Powell was making about, I suppose, revisiting the Good Friday Agreement almost 25 years on. Does it need to be revised? Does it need to be rejigged? I mean, Naomi Long is going to have a very strong case to make about a reform agenda for Stormont. You know, Stormont, you remember these
pictures. This is on the designation of identity.
Well, it's not just, that's a big part of it, you know, but also the whole idea of a power sharing that was really predicated on the notion of orange and green.
Mm-hmm.
Northern Ireland is not orange or green anymore. So she's a very strong case to make. And I mean, I remember these photographs from not too long ago, where you had this statue of Edward Carson, the famous statue outside the Stormont Parliament, and then Mary Lou MacDonald and senior Sinn Féiners posing beside
yes.
it. You know, your time is up.
Mm-hmm.
Those who follow the tradition of Edward Carson, and they've been vindicated to an extent when it comes to the election result. And yet they're there outside the Stormont Parliament. Mary Lou MacDonald was referring yesterday now to the highest office in the land, you know, which is First Minister. So that question is, can they go in, even if they do get it over the line, you know, even if the standoff is dealt with, is that going to be fit for political purpose in Northern Ireland, particularly given the strength of the Alliance Party?
Mm-hmm.
And is there going to have to be a recognition of that greater diversity? Is there any reason why the Good Friday Agreement cannot be revisited?
Yeah, I'm just going back to what Jonathan Powell said, you know, that power sharing has served its purpose now.
Well, I mean, that's
it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, that also sounds a bit stark. I mean, it hasn't served its purpose. I think the point could be made that power sharing as a concept based around the notion of orange and green, has served its purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you could certainly make that case based on the election
but
results.
Who makes that call to revisit the Good Friday Agreement, to reopen it?
Yeah, that has to be an agreement between Belfast, London and Dublin. You know, that is not something that can be solved by a particular solo run. So it would be a big ask, obviously. And there are those who, I suppose, have made reference to the Good Friday Agreement at various stages to suit their own short-term political ends. I mean, you might recall in 2016, Arlene Foster suggested it was outrageous commentary to argue that the Brexit referendum would somehow be a danger to the peace process or would be a danger to the Good Friday Agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And yet unionists, when it suited them, were talking up the damage that was being done to the Good Friday Agreement as a result of all the rows over the protocol and everything else. So it serves to remind, I suppose, remind us of something that's positive in the sense that there's a fluidity there now, that there is a changed political complexion. I think most people who are looking at the history of Northern Ireland would have been very enthusiastic about the idea of that greater fluidity or that greater sense of multiple identities or multiple layers. And yet we're still going to be stuck, you can't help feeling, in the next few months in traditional grooves. And that's what I mean, I suppose, about mm-hmm. the reliance of falling back on the default position. You know, unionism has an awful lot of soul searching to do because, yes, whilst their vote held up to a certain extent, they are still full of anxiety. And even historically, when they were in a very strong position, their defiance was often tempered by a deep anxiety about whether or not they could rely on London. Of course, they couldn't rely on Dublin. And there was a degree of a siege mentality there. How is that going to serve them when it comes to coming to terms with the loss of supremacy?
Mm-hmm.
And that really is another one of the big narratives of this election. It's the loss of unionist supremacy.
It's an extraordinary situation because 101 years ago, this place, Northern Ireland, was set up, the border was drawn so that this couldn't happen. Isn't that right?
Well, this is the thing about the passage of time. I mean, was that ever going to be sustained? There was a feeling 100 years ago that unionists would have an inbuilt two-thirds majority. That's why they went for six counties as opposed to the nine counties of the Ulster province. And of course, they weren't thinking about 100 years. And even James Craig was able to acknowledge to Michael Collins 100 years ago when he was talking to him, there was that North-South dialogue. It may be, he said, that in 50 or 75 years, we may consider joining the South. Now, that's not something he was saying publicly, but he was acknowledging that nothing
stays the same.
Is set in stone. And it can take 50, 75, 100, perhaps even more years. And that's something that Sinn Féin may also have to begin to accept, whatever about what they're saying publicly, that the time frame that they're talking about and this inevitable journey or this inevitable drive towards unity, that might not be realistic either. And you've also got to consider the views of those in the Republic. You know, go back to this question that Piers Doherty raised before the Brexit referendum. Unity, he said, is not my constituents' burning question. Is unity now in 2022 the burning question of most of those who are voting for Sinn Féin across the island? That's debatable.
Mm-hmm. And then on the other side is the protocol, the reason why people are voting for the DUP, and you'll get 10 different answers to that too. Dermot, thanks very much. Good to see you. Dermot Farrater there. We'll take a break.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.